Well, South Africans are bemused by the Chief of the Defence Force, General Rudzani Mapwanya, going to Iran, telling Iran that, well, South Africa and Iran are joined at the hip, that they want to fight against the anti-colonial forces and more. We'll get into that in more detail. But it's really made people in South Africa concerned. Not least because this is not a position that is widely held in the country, not even amongst the government. And the government has come out, the government of national unity, to say this is not official policy. But if you think that there's confusion in South Africa, you've got to wonder what's going on in the United States. And that's why we've asked Joshua Maservi, who is the guy who looks after the Africa desk at the Hudson Institute, one of the leading think tanks in Washington, D.C., to just give us a little bit of a taste of perhaps what the White House, American politicians on Capitol Hill and Washington generally are thinking about the latest, would you call it, shooting your foot off exercise by South Africa. Josh, lovely to talk with you. The news caught a lot of us here by surprise when we saw these statements coming out of Iran. As far as the United States is concerned, given that there is the great attempt by South Africa to get that 30% tariff down, how was it greeted where you live?
Yeah, hi, Alec. Thanks for having me on again. Good to see you. And I think the news raced around the WhatsApp chat groups and other communication platforms, and I think in some ways, people in Washington almost just shake their head in despair. Maybe when this happens, because I'm not sure people are even particularly surprised anymore that the rhetoric from the South African government about wanting to have better relations with the United States, wanting a reset, does not align with the actual actions of very senior people within the South African government, including, in this case, General Mapwanya. So I think it reinforces this idea within Washington that Pretoria is not going to change on this, and the African National Congress as well. They're not going to change. They're not going to undertake the types of substantive actions and reforms that are necessary to actually repair the relationship with the United States.
Is there a possibility, though, because we have seen President Trump acting on occasion when he gets irritated by something, is there a possibility that that 30% tariff, which was at one stage supposedly going to get another 10% bonus for being a member of BRICS, that didn't seem to happen, but that could be there could be further punishment. I mean, heavens, he's punished the Swiss for hardly doing anything vaguely close to this.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. The president, it always depends on a number of different factors. It depends on what the current environment is as far as crises and other things. So is this something that will catch his attention? It depends on whether the issue will get into his inner circle, the circle that's very close around him and can present it to him, or if it gets to a senior enough level, not even to the president, but to someone senior enough, maybe in the cabinet, who will decide that this is the type of thing that the president would be upset by and requires a response. I don't know that this issue by itself will provoke another response from the United States. I think what it does is make it just that much harder for the U.S.-South Africa relationship to improve. I think it just gets added to sort of this running list that we have that grows bigger every day of the provocations by the South African government towards the United States.
Well, the South African government has distanced itself from the general's addresses, but I guess we have to see it in context. He's the chief of the South African National Defence Force. He has been in that position since April 2021. He was appointed by Cyril Ramaphosa, and that means that he's Well, what would the equivalent in the US be of the guy who's in charge of the whole military?
It would be the equivalent. It's not an exact parallel, but the closest would be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, our senior most uniformed military officer who oversees, is a four-star general and oversees the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as I said, which are the Joint Chiefs are the senior most ranking officers for each branch of the U.S. military. And then sitting above that is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs. So that would be the equivalent, obviously extraordinarily senior position.
And the commander in chief of the Defense Force in South Africa is the president. Is that the same thing in the United States?
Yes, it is. So the president is the commander in chief. He is the civilian that is in charge of the U.S. military. That is why he is able to salute uniformed military personnel, and uniformed military personnel will salute him as well, because he is the commander in chief, the single highest authority over the U.S. military.
So I'm just trying to work this out on what the consequences might be, or if there's something behind the scenes here. Would that four-star general in the United States be able to do something like this, which would embarrass his boss, which would be the president of the country? I'm just trying to see whether General Mpawanya has done this out of his own volition, or if he's sending a signal to the politicians, or if he's actually been sent there in the first place.
Yeah. So to your first question, absolutely not. If the chairman of the Joint Chiefs took a trip under his own volition, or maybe even if he was sent, but then started discussing very explicitly political matters and weighing in on foreign policy, he would be fired. He would be gone probably before he touched down in the United States. Well, he'd probably touch down in the United States and then they'd fire him, but he would be gone. It would be a scandal. It would be massively out of keeping with the culture of the U.S. military. They are highly deferential, as they should be, to civilian control. That is an ethic that is embedded within the U.S. military. It is key to the functioning of the United States as a safe and prosperous country. So it would be not tolerated at all. There's an interesting historical precedent. Again, not an exact parallel, but presidents, in the past have fired senior U.S. military officers for what they perceived as insubordination or, getting astray from what the civilian government was trying to do as far as policy. So no, in the American system, would not be tolerated. Now, I think what's really one of the many interesting things about the story is that the presidency, so Cyril Ramaphosa's spokesman, has come out and said this was not an authorized trip. Okay, so the senior most military officer in your country is, according to the presidency, of his own volition, going to a country that is at the center of a geopolitical firestorm, Iran, and making all sorts of highly inflammatory statements and highly political statements. That's an extraordinary, if you believe what the presidency is saying, that's an extraordinary indictment of the South African government on its own, that it does not control its senior most military person and doesn't even know what he is doing, much less what he's going to say at a highly sensitive moment. Now, the other thing that I think is really interesting from an American perspective is that even if you accept that this was an unauthorized trip, okay, let's accept that that is what happened. The South African government's response has not been a condemnation of Mpawanya's comments, the substance of his comments, the fact that he was making common cause and solidarity with the brave freedom fighters, the anti-colonial fighters of Iran, and taking barely veiled shots at the United States and the West. That is not what they're condemning. Nor could they with a straight face, because again, the ANC and the South African government has a well-established history of very warm relations with Iran, of siding with Iran on virtually all occasions. Remember, directly after the October 7th brutality that Hamas unleashed, Hamas, an Iranian proxy, unleashed against Israel. South African government, Durko, released a statement blaming Israel for the attack. It was an extraordinary statement in all the wrong ways. Naledi Pandor, former foreign minister of South Africa, has had calls with Tehran, and even traveled to Tehran, and et cetera, et cetera. So this is a well-established relationship. So again, from the American perspective, even if you accept that this was not an authorized trip, the response from the South African government is still really telling, because they're not condemning the substance of what Mapwanya said. They're condemning the fact that he apparently freelanced on his own, that he transgressed bureaucratic distinctions between Durko and the Ministry of Defense, and that his timing was really poor, because South African government is in the midst of these very delicate negotiations with the United States. Those are the substances of the critiques from the South African government and commentators and et cetera that you hear. It's not that our senior most military officer went to the capital of a country that sponsors terrorism all around the world, that has killed hundreds, maybe thousands of Americans, that has killed many thousands of Arabs in the Middle East, thousands of Israelis, etc., has launched terror attacks in Africa, has had many other terror attacks that were based in Africa flummoxed or forestalled, thank goodness. That's not the problem, right? That's where he went and talked and said all these nice things about him. The problem is that it embarrassed the South African government and kicked off a bureaucratic firestorm. So to me, watching this as an American who's deeply involved in these issues, the pushback from the South African government against Mapwanya's comments don't at all comfort me that the South African government is headed in the right direction on this.
But it's almost impossible to absorb all of this, because you've got a government that is supposedly in control of its defense force, but in this case it says, well, he did his own thing. But they don't fire him, but they go and fire a deputy minister who took a trip because his party said he needed to go to the United States. So it really is, you got to wonder, as a South African, how dumb does Pretoria think that its citizens are in a case like this? It's like beggar's belief. Or is the general just saying, up yours, Pretoria, I don't care, I am the leader of the defense force, I will do what I want, and actually I'm in control, so just I dare you to try and fire me.
Yeah, whatever all the reasons were behind this and the true motivations, it's all bad. No matter which door you choose, which option you choose, it all reflects horribly on Pretoria, on the South African government, obviously. And yeah, to your point, Andrew Whitfield, the deputy trade minister, was fired by President Ramaphosa recently, ostensibly because he did not receive permission to travel to the United States. I saw him on that trip. Wonderful guy, competent, smart, and really cared about South Africa, but he was fired over this infraction. So I think President Ramaphosa has two choices here. If indeed this was an unauthorized trip, as the presidency has said, for consistency's sake alone, he must fire Mapwanya. Otherwise, the double standard would be glaring. Or he could say, actually, this was an authorized trip, which then a whole host of questions arise, well, why did you authorize the trip? So if it was an authorized trip, we don't find Mapwanya's statements as egregious an infraction as we found Deputy Trade Minister Whitfield's decision to travel to the United States without explicit permission from the presidency. So again, either option is awful for the South African government. And no matter what they do, maybe they can rescue some shred of credibility by firing Mapuania, but I think the damage is done, frankly, in Washington, because at the best case scenario is that this demonstrates that President Ramaphosa does not have control over his own defense forces, that the government cannot achieve basic coordination and basic communication within itself. That's the best case scenario for Pretoria here. But even if that's the best case scenario, it's actually maybe a little worse than I said, because you still had a very senior person from South Africa, government official from South Africa, going to Iran, this theocratic dictatorship that sponsors terrorism all around the world, and saying really nice things about it, and explicitly aligning, trying to align South Africa, or maybe publicizing South Africa's alignment with Tehran. So the mere fact that someone like that is in such a powerful senior position within the government, again, is a terrible signal to the United States and to the West.
Sure, and to the citizens. This is the guy, by the way, who was in charge when we had the KZN riots in July 2021, where the army was absent, or notable by its absence for the first few days, until the citizens stood up and got rid of the mobs. And then the army and the police suddenly came back into the picture. So hasn't got a great track record, but I guess he's got the guns. And in Africa, you got the guns. Who knows where it goes from there. There are a few other things that are going on at the moment in the U.S.-South African relations. As far as the tariffs are concerned, have you picked up any changes or potential changes in that 30%?
I haven't heard much. You know, the 30% rate is interesting because it's the highest one in sub-Saharan Africa. The only other African countries that got 30% tariffs were Algeria and Libya, in North Africa, of course. So South Africa stands alone at that rate. Now, there was always going to be, I believe, a baseline rate. So, in fact, the Trump administration distinguishes between base tariffs, 10%, and reciprocal tariffs, which is some margin on top of that 10%, that those reciprocal tariffs are informed by a host of things, including trade issues, but also political issues. If you read President Trump's executive orders on the tariffs, it's explicit that misalignment with American national security interests, foreign policy, is a reason for reciprocal tariffs. So I think that is why South Africa, in part, why South Africa is facing the highest tariff rate in all sub-Saharan Africa, because it's so clearly misaligned with American national interests and American foreign policy. This trip by General Mapuania being just the latest example of this. So I think that even though there is a trade investment package that apparently, the South African government is putting together and has presented and may present another to the U.S., even if that's a great package, I don't think it will substantively affect the tariff rate. Maybe it could bring it down a little bit, but even that I would be a little bit surprised by. It's not impossible, but I'd be surprised, because the core of the problem here are these political issues. Trade investment, making some concessions on pork or chicken from South Africa is not going to move the needle for the United States government on its tariff decision.
Josh, I'm not sure if you've got your copy of The Economist yet, this week's Economist, but there is a leader. It's not often South Africa hits one of the major leaders in the publication. The leader says it's time for South Africa to get rid of BEE, and the strap line being, or further in the publication, being the thing that made Ramaphosa rich has made his country poor. It's a pressure on this crazy system. Crazy if you're an economist, maybe not so crazy if you're a social analyst or a social worker, is now starting to grow. That pressure is intensifying. Are you seeing it in Washington as well? Or indeed, are you hearing anything about possible changes in BEE?
I haven't heard that there will be any changes in BEE, but it is absolutely an issue for the United States. And people, you know, I've heard South Africans say, well, this is meddling in South African internal affairs, but this does affect the United States. BEE is a huge non-tariff trade barrier. If you're an American company wanting to do business in South Africa, you have to give up control of 30% of your operation, or you have to do some sort of equity equivalent or something. But bottom line is that you have to take on an immense amount of a very significant amount of extra cost and difficulty and compliance, I'm sure, is a nightmare, et cetera. The United States does not demand that of South African countries entering our market. So this is where the reciprocal part of the reciprocal tariffs come in. BEE is absolutely a non-tariff trade barrier. Whether or not you agree with the reasoning behind BEE, whether or not you understand the history, it doesn't matter. The reality is that it is a non-tariff trade barrier, a very large one. So it does affect the United States quite dramatically, actually. And American companies that are already doing business in South Africa and others that might be interested in doing business. And there is now enough evidence. I did read the Economist article that you referenced. I thought it was great. It distilled a lot of scholarship that has come out, some fairly recently, about both the profound ineffectiveness of BEE in actually addressing things like income inequality, growing the black middle class, and certainly redressing historical injustices, but also the cost that BEE has imposed. It's not just that it's failing in its stated mission, it's actually imposing a very significant cost on the South African economy, and it's now affecting its international relations with countries like the United States. So my sense is, again, this is a question for the South African voters to decide and to make their voices heard at the ballot box. But as someone who genuinely really, really like South Africa as a country, who has always enjoyed my numerous trips there, I think this is a failed policy, and it really hurts South Africa. Now, can the African National Congress abandon BEE? I'm not sure. I'm actually pretty skeptical. I think they are these revolutionary, you know, the National Democratic Revolution, transformation, all of these sort of revolutionary ideas that they subscribe to and that they tout are their only thing they've got left, in a sense, because their record, their governance record, is catastrophic. It is so poor that they cannot invoke it when speaking to voters. Instead, they have to invoke these ideological campaigns or projects like BEE. I also wonder, and I'm getting far outside my field here and engaging in some pop psychology here, but I also wonder if it's so, the idea that they are the righteous fighters for freedom and emancipation from the shackles of neocolonialism and apartheid is so central to especially senior ANC officials' psyches, that if they abandoned core components of this supposed struggle, like BEE, that I think psychically could be very hard for them. I wonder if it's just personally, it'd be extraordinarily difficult, because it could shake up their entire perception of self, and they may have to confront the fact that they have failed spectacularly in governing this country. So again, that's, you know, I'm way outside my lane here, but I observing this, I've started to wonder, because they just simply double down and double down and double down on these demonstrably failed policies, regardless of the mountains of evidence that are stacking up, demonstrating that they are indeed failed.
Oh, it's interesting. The Economist was very clear in that. And we've had many academic reports led by one from Wits University, which highlighted 100 people who have essentially captured the country and continue with a policy that is making everybody else poor. But, well, let's see where it goes to from here. We also had a police general saying that the country's been captured by crooked politicians. It all just seems like we're in the darkest of times. The US is trying to do its bit, perhaps to shine a little bit of light here, in certainly from where it's sitting. And maybe the last point is Ronnie Jackson's bill. Where is it now? And is it likely that when the recess is over, that the bill will then get back onto the mainstream of being enacted?
Yeah, so Roy Jackson's bill, as we discussed last time, has passed out of markup, which is a sort of a committee level analysis or discussion and treatment of the bill. So now the next step is for it to go to the House floor, the full House floor, for a vote. It's hard to get on a full House floor calendar. There are so many pieces of competing legislation, all of which are vying for a spot on the calendar, that it can be difficult. So I think some key signals will be whether Ronnie Jackson, Representative Jackson, gets more co-sponsors for the legislation, especially from leadership, whether it be committee, subcommittee leadership, or just broader senior Republicans signing on to this. That can give more momentum to such a bill. The other interesting signal to watch for is whether the Senate puts together a companion bill, which would ease the passage, because we need to remember, we, of course, have a bicameral here in the United States, a bicameral system. So the House can pass this, but then it would have to go to the Senate to be passed as well, and then ultimately to the president for his signature. So we've been on recess for August, as is typical. So there's been no substantive action in Congress. So we'll have to wait to see in September, when they come back, what sort of momentum the bill has.
Certainly the visit and utterances by the head of the South African Defense Force in Iran is surely going to help that bill, or give that bill a little bit of support that it might not otherwise have received. So unintended consequences, General Mpwanya, the chief of the South African National Defense Force. Josh Maservi is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. I'm Alec Hogg from biznews.com.